Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is the Nintendo Show 64, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And like the name implies, we talk about Nintendo 64 games as they came out. We do sort of semi-chronologically as they came out 21 years ago. We haven't done one of these in quite a while.
Really?
I think it's been a couple months since I think the last one was Castlevania 64, maybe.
What have you guys been doing since I've been gone?
We've been doing a lot of mini shows, actually. Like, it is so difficult to keep up with like new releases and like retro games on the N64, even though there aren't a whole lot of like regular monthly N64 releases. It's just really difficult to like sit down and play an N64 game. I don't know why. Like the barrier of entry is much higher than just playing a Super Nintendo game. But you know, we're still gonna plug along. We're gonna chug through and cover as much as we can.
I did go to, when I was in Belgium.
Yeah.
I had this grand idea of finding a cheap N64 game that was like maybe something that's not typically seen in the US, and then bring it home to you guys and be like, here you go. Didn't find anything, but I did find a few retro stores that I've wandered into since I was there.
Anything cool in there?
The one that I was in Brussels that I went and saw, because there was one I went and saw in Amsterdam, which was really cool, but it had I had a lot of really cool stuff in there.
Do you remember the name of it?
I can't remember it at all. I can't remember any of the names or anything. But this one in Brussels was really cool, but the downside is that when you first initially walk in, the immediate area is 90% Funko Pops.
Okay.
And then to the right, there was like a wall of like weird video game accessory stuff, like Zelda wallets and Pikachu hats and backpacks and things like that. And then in the back behind, past the counter, there was their little retro area that had like different bins, like N64, PlayStation, and stuff like that. And they had very little N64 games, like five, and they weren't anything special. And then downstairs, because everything in Brussels is thin and long and high, so right downstairs there was like an old arcade cabinet, and there was a couple computers set up.
Oh, nice.
TV and stuff. So they had this little retro game room. So it was pretty cool, but there wasn't really anything that interesting there to buy. Unless you're into Funko Pops.
I just Google searched retro game stores Amsterdam and just see what all came up. There seems to be a few. Like, does the name Game Over ring a bell? Like, there's actually
quest. Yeah, that may have been it.
it is like a very, like, they don't have many pictures, but it is very like thin and long.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it was cool. They had a bunch of glass cases, and they were just littered, just full of it. Dreamcast, a regular Sega Genesis games. They were just littered with everything. They had like regular Game Boys in there. It was nuts. It was great.
It'd be interesting to see like the Nintendo related stuff at retro game stores in Europe, because Nintendo wasn't nearly as popular, you know, in Europe until you're getting like into like the Wii days, like really late into these more modern consoles. They don't have the same like nostalgia for, you know, NES and Super Nintendo and N64 games as people in like a North America do.
Yeah, like PlayStation took up like four cabinets, and then of Nintendo took up like half of one. So they really didn't have much.
Hmm.
But they really went nuts with like the PlayStation stuff.
What was the one in Brussels that you were talking about?
If you said the name, I could think of it, but I just Crazy Something, or I think it was next to something that was called Crazy Something. I can't remember what it was called. I can't remember it.
Was it like the same situation where like not a whole lot of Nintendo stuff?
They didn't really have a lot of retro games at all, really.
Oh, okay.
Because they only had some bins and stuff in a bin. And they were like little like Tupperware bins. They weren't like big, massive bins. I only saw like five Nintendo games. So, I mean, yeah, it wasn't much. But I was thinking about you guys while I was over there. I was like, this would be a cool souvenir, but I couldn't find anything. So,
I mean, there's some pretty like fun names for some retro games. There's one called Chain Reaction.
Nope, not that one.
Smart Toys. Smart Toys looks like a chain.
Yeah, there were a few of those. Yep.
Super Gabby games, Old Star games. Warhammer.
They'd be surprised what kind of things you see over there. Like, they had a lot of comic book shops. Because comics over there are actually pretty big. Like, the Smurfs are originally from Brussels. And so there's Smurf crap everywhere.
I had no idea that the Smurfs IP was imported.
I mean, if I remember correctly, that's what I was told. Or they're just really big over there. That and Tintin, The Adventures of Tintin.
Oh, so sure.
Those couple of things were really... I think they're from there, or it was somebody from Belgium. Like, I don't know.
I think they're like really Tintin. Yeah, I think Tintin's more of like a European thing. Mm-hmm. There was that one animated movie in the U.S., but outside of that, I've never had any sort of exposure to the Tintin franchise.
Yeah, I wasn't. Yeah, same here.
Yeah, and when it was coming out, it was like, what the fuck is Tintin? I have no idea what this is.
Yeah, I went to an art exhibit. It was for Monet. And it was a really weird art exhibit because there weren't actually any of his paintings there, but it was like this weird thing where they're casting this weird... they had a bunch of projectors set up and the entire large room, it was a massive room with these columns, were lit and they projected various paintings and various different kind of like designs. It was a weird...
It's like Monet fan art?
Yeah, it was weird.
Okay.
But right in front of it, next to it, there was like this other small shop, and right in front of it, in front of all of it, was this massive Smurfs statue of them on a mushroom. I'm like, all right, this is here in the middle of this courtyard. Why not?
I mean, yeah, those are two things that, you know, go together like peanut butter and jelly, Monet and Smurfs.
Yeah, exactly. Why is this here? But okay.
All right, well, the big... topic for N64 games this month is Mario Party, the original. Okay.
Alright.
And that is a game, you're like, I'll be totally upfront. I have not spent any time in the original Mario Party, although I do own it. Did you ever own any of the N64 Mario Party games?
I have not. I did play them, but I have not owned them.
Do you remember which ones that you played? Because there's three on the N64.
I couldn't tell you. I think it's one of the later ones. I don't think it's the first one.
And they are, of course, like 1 through 3. They didn't like do one on the GameCube and then go back to the N64 or any of that sort of.
There's not some random Mario Kart Double Dash, and so it's not.
Yeah, it's not like some sort of weird numbering system, but the first one I bought a couple months back, and. Well, after I bought it, I immediately thought, why the fuck did I buy this? Because not I have any objection to owning Mario Party, but a used cartridge for Mario Party N64 is $50.
Why did you buy that?
Right. Like, at the time, I must have just been flush with cash. You know what? It might have been back in January when there weren't a whole lot of new release games, so I was totally comfortable with just blowing $50 on a game on a whim. But I bought it. At the same,
did you misread it and you thought it was $5?
No. No, it was nothing like that. I bought it.
John, I was trying to give you an out here.
No, there is no out. I bought it at the same time that I bought this game for the PS2 called Shadowheart Covenants, which is an older RPG for the PS2, kind of mid-generation for that system. And when I was buying the two of them, Shadowhearts isn't a cheap RPG either. That was like a $30 game, but I ended up returning it because they only sent me disc 2, so this is useless, take this away. And I haven't gotten back to rebuying, because that's a series. Speaking of retro games, I've been working my way through the Shadowheart series on the PS2. I'm almost done with the first one, but through one of my gaming goals for 2020 is to play through that series. There's 3 PS2 games.
Yeah, they ain't good.
The first one is fine. It's an interesting
spirit.
Yeah, it's. This sort of game, the Shadow Hearts games, would never have gotten sequels on modern systems. It would have been a one and done thing because it never would have found an audience. But they're this weird occultic RPG where you're going through World War I Europe, and there's this weird occult trying to take over people's bodies or something. I don't know. I'm not paying much attention to the narrative, but it's got this occult art style. And very demonic stuff going on. It's interesting, but when you
it's
look
great
at
for the family,
yeah, it's a good family game. Mika watches me play it. when you when you look at other RPGs on the PS2, and like of course the two big ones, the two heavy hitters are Final Fantasy X and Final Fantasy XII. They're these games that are very big in scope. Like you have all these different areas and dungeons and open places, like the Thunder Plains and the Calm Lands, like. And Final Fantasy XII especially, like even though they're recycling the same assets over and over again, they want to give you this very big sense of space. Whereas in Shadow Hearts, any given dungeon that you go into is like 6 or 7 screens. And those are the bigger ones. So it's a very small game. It takes about 20 hours to get to the end if you're being pretty thorough. So it's a shorter game, especially in comparison to other games that came out around that time. And the battle system isn't like as interesting as a Final Fantasy X, which is a tough comparison because Final Fantasy X has a fucking perfect battle system. So when you look at something like compared to Shadow Hearts, where a lot of battles are just going to be like mashing your attack, and they try to mix it up, they try to give you some interesting things to do by like giving you this wheel that you have to like spin and like stop the wheel at certain points in order to, for your attacks to have any effect. So it's more than just like tapping the X button to attack. You actually have to pay attention to like the timing of your attacks. The downside of that is if you don't pay attention for a second and miss one of your stops on that wheel, then your attack has no effect at all. Oh. So it can be a bit annoying in that respect. I don't know. Like the game is okay. I don't regret spending $20 on it. It's fine.
I mean, $20 is okay for a trial thing.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
no big deal.
I do that on a game I have never heard of before, but yeah. Looked interesting. Like, yeah, why not? Let's try this out.
Have you ever played, like, a Mario Party game? Like, have you ever owned a Mario Party game? Let's start there.
I've never owned a Mario Party game. I have played them.
Uh-huh. Have you ever, played one, like, for more than 20 minutes?
Yes, I have played through full Mario Party sessions. I am familiar with the game. It brings out a dark side of me.
Good. Go on.
I don't know why. I've almost lost friends over this.
Which ones?
And not like we don't talk anymore. Like they've almost died.
Okay.
it's gotten violent. Wario cheats. I don't.
Well, the sort of thing. I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. The sort of a crux of Mario Party is that it's a game where by the end of it, you can't really be sure who's going to win.
Yeah, because they'll just pass out random awards for no reason. You're like, sure, that one.
Right, you lost the most mini games. Here's a star. So, I mean, I guess we might as well start out from like 30,000 feet. It's a board game, essentially.
Yes.
You roll the dice, and then everyone, all of the four playing characters take a turn moving spaces. They land on spaces, and they'll like get coins or lose coins, depending on the space that they land on. And after everyone's had a turn, you play a mini game, and that's your primary.
Well, not necessarily. In the original Mario Party, if I remember correctly, based on what type of space that they landed on, you would go into a mini game. So you have rounds where you're doing like 4 mini games, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Also,
am I wrong? I could be wrong about this.
You know what? I will go plug it in later tonight, and if you're wrong, we'll issue a correction later.
Which I find hilarious, because you could have just spent $50 on the new one.
Yeah, even though I've spent $50 on the game, I haven't played it. And let me finish that thought before we get more into that. So I bought this at the same time I'm spending $30 on another game. So I have in my Amazon cart, I had them both in my Amazon cart. And I was like, you know, $80 for 2 retro games. I'm not spending any other money, any other substantial money on games this month.
Right.
Why not place the order? And as soon as the order was placed and Amazon confirmed it, I was like, did I really just spend $50 on Mario Party 1?
Yes.
What was I thinking?
Oh, that's so good.
Well, the thing is, like, this is an expensive cartridge, but you can't download this game anywhere.
No, you can't download it anywhere.
It's not available on any virtual console service, and I think one of the other N64 Mario Party games was available on a virtual console. I don't remember if it was Wii or Wii U. But I mean, that was the only way you could play an N64 Mario Party game outside of buying the cart. So one of the things about the original Mario Party was that there was this mini game that required you to rotate the analog stick, that flimsy little analog stick. over and over again.
Yeah, there was a few of those that did that.
And that's something that really disappeared from the series after that. You know, for
thank
I mean, you would think that the main problem with that is you're going to break that little thing off, and I'm sure that didn't do like any favors to the controller, because if you pick up an N64 controller now that's been, you know, well used, that thing is loose.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's not the most secure analog stick in the world. But what the main complaint was that it was like hurting people's hands because they were spinning so hard. And there was some sort of like threat of a lawsuit. So Nintendo decided that, you know, anyone who was having complaints, they would like send them a glove that they could wear to play Mario Party.
Oh my God. Oh, this can't be real.
No, it's totally, it's, well, I mean, if we're to believe Wikipedia, it's real. I'm actually, like, it'd be funny to see, like, if people are trying to sell these things and how much they're going for. Like, if it turns like this weird collector's fetish to own these gloves.
I would love to see this glove with the Nintendo 64 logo on it.
I mean, for all we know, they could have just sent, like, a bland glove that they had just lying around.
Just latex gloves.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they said. Like, oh, yeah, we got a box of gloves. Let's go ahead and send it. I'm not seeing anything on Amazon anyway.
Okay. All right.
So Mario Party 64, just to kind of pull back to the 30,000-foot view again, you're going to be playing through the mini games, and then at the end you're getting awarded stars. So even if, you know, you got the good dice rolls and you moved to the right spaces and you took the right paths down the board, still no guarantee that you were going to win.
Hmm.
Which is something that's stuck with the series even to now. It was developed by Hudson Soft back in the day, that original game. And Hudson Soft, that's a company that we've talked about a couple of times on the N64, because they also did Bomberman.
Have we?
They did
Bomberman.
Did the Bomberman games. Bomberman 64, that's the one you like.
Yeah.
Bomberman Hero, that's the one that I thought was pretty good.
Well, Bomberman 64 is more of a nostalgia, warm place in my heart.
Okay. That's totally fair.
So,
well, Hudson, we talked about them a little bit because they ended up getting absorbed by Konami back in, I think, 2005. Konami became a majority stakeholder, I think, back in 2001, and then 2005, they just totally absorbed the rotting corpse of Hudson. And of course, what does Konami do with anything? They make it worse.
Yeah. So
Hudson, as it used to be, no longer exists, which is a shame because they worked pretty closely with Nintendo at times. Even back when, like, they had their own hardware, their own system, they still ended up working with Nintendo quite a bit.
And now they're in, like, airports, and they're in malls for retro stores. And...
Oh, yeah. I see.
I don't think that's the same company, but still, I like the...
Actually, there is that retro TurboGrafx mini console that got delayed, as if that thing was ever going to come out at all. But I think the TurboGrafx, if I remember correctly, that was their console that they were very closely involved in, if not the actual manufacturer of that. But Mario Party came out in February 1999, so we're not that far off from actually being on time with this game.
No. I mean, what came out in March? Anything interesting come out in March?
Snowboard Kids 2.
And we're talking about Mario Party?
I know, right? We missed the ball on this one.
Oh my gosh. I'd like to thoroughly apologize to our listeners.
Well, it's funny because that would be like the third snowboard game that we've at least observed coming out on the system. Snowboard Kids 1 came out about a year previous, I think in January of 98. And then 1080 Snowboarding was at some point, I think in the summer of 98, if I remember correctly. When that game came out.
Why would you have that knowledge off your head?
Because we've talked about these games. So
I have extensive knowledge on snowboarding game release dates, even though I don't play any of them.
Well, snowboard games, like, it's fascinating. It's this relic. Like, snowboard games don't come out anymore. Like,
that's fair.
They're like Tony Hawk games, or like just like skateboarding games in general. There was a time from like 1997 to, what would you say, 2003, where you had this 5-year window where it was like, you know, skateboarding games and snowboarding games and BMX and like all these like extreme sports stuff, and now they're gone. They don't exist anymore.
Excitebots need to come back with an Excitebot snowboarding.
It would be really great to see Excitebots.
Oh my gosh.
I talked when I was bored and did a solo show, I talked about a little bit about Monster Games very briefly, and they did Excite Truck and Excite Bots. And now, you know what they're doing? They're making fucking NASCAR games.
Aww.
And they've been making NASCAR games for like the past 6 years.
Oh,
and Nintendo, I know you're listening. You need to get them to do a racing game and Excitebot games on Switch. Get them out of NASCAR.
Make it snowboarding. Let's bring this back.
Yeah, get them out of NASCAR hell.
And while we're at it, get Dokapon Kingdom.
That's the only thing the Switch is missing.
I mean, that's it. Snowboarding games and Dokapon. That's all we need. Like, we're done. Get us ready for the next console. We're done with Switch.
Yeah, on to the Super Switch. That's all we need. So, I mean, like, outside of that, like, Mario Party, on the next show, on the next retro show, I'll have a couple more thoughts. I won't spend much more time on it, but, you know, we'll at least have an idea of how many different boards there are in the original Mario Party, because these games always have multiple boards, and they all have, like, their little gimmick to them, you know, whether there's, like, thwomps yep. around, or, like, it's a desert and they're sinking sand kind of thing. It's all, like, very, like, heavily inspired by Mario mechanics. And the mini games are always like grab the things and get it to the goal, or jump over the thing. You know, they do a good job of like having these wacky setups, but always having like very similar, like familiar mechanics that you're not going to be lost when trying to execute anything.
Yeah, you know, some of the later ones had like a practice thing before you actually would go into the round.
Yeah, so exactly.
There'd be like the screen explaining how the game works, and you could go and do the thing and get used to the mechanics, and then the game would start.
And that's when you take advantage of the people that you're playing with, because you've played them before and they haven't, and you just press the button like, oh shit, I forgot to press practice. Oh well, we'll be fine.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, Mario Party seems like Mario Party, like as itself, is a pretty well-known commodity. So I don't really have any other thoughts about Mario Party 64. I haven't done a ranking yet this year for N64 games. I don't have the list handy. I still got to find a place for Castlevania 64 on that ranking. I don't know. Mario Party would probably end up somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, because I think, if I remember correctly, it could be wrong. I mean, we'll have to see when we actually play it. I think it still was pretty mechanically okay and everything, but I mean, it's a party game.
Yeah, we're gonna need a second controller to actually get going on some Mario Party when we test it out.
Yep.
So, been playing any other retro games? Anything else?
While I was over in Belgium, I ran out of games to play, so to speak. So I went ahead and downloaded Okami.
Oh, on the Switch.
On my Switch, because I love that game fiercely. And it's just as good as I remember, and just as entertaining.
How far did you get?
I made it to the tundra area, just at the beginning of that. So that was the last of the one kind of boss areas, until you go to the last section where you go and hop on the Ark or whatever to refight the bosses and stuff. But yeah, it's pretty far. I'm over 20 hours into the game. I was just playing it a bit every night, here and there.
But isn't that game like 60 hours?
No, not actually. My first time, I put probably around that into it, because there's a lot of little things that they really don't tell you about. They don't hold your hand in things. You'll be wandering around areas going, what am I supposed to do? Things aren't very easily explained to you. But now that I've played it before and I'm older now, I was able to pretty much figure things out. I did still have to look up a guide in a couple of spots, because I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Mm. There is one thing that does bug me, and it bugged me again when I made it this point. It's such a small, minor thing. But there's an enemy in the game. I forget what it's called. I think it's called Blockhead. It's literally just a stone wall with a face, and he's got a spear, and he's standing in your way, and in order to beat him, you have to ram into him, and then like these spots briefly blink on him, and those are his weak points. And you need to use your brush to put dots where those spots were in order to beat him. But it's annoying because the brush isn't the most easy thing to move around. Like, it's not precise. And so it's tough to get that spot exactly. So I sat there for like a half hour on the guy until I looked up a guide to how to just skip him. And so that became the best thing I've ever done in that game. It was the most gratifying thing just to skip that guy and not bother with him.
Nice.
Because it's very, very bothersome. But the game itself, the graphics and the artwork of it just hold up so well because it's that watercolor kind of effect
mm-hmm.
that they kind of do, kind of like Japanese kind of art style. And so there's not really a better form of it or a worse form of it. It just is good as it is. The music is very, very entertaining, very calming. And it's just funny. It's just a very goofy, what on earth is going on kind of game. But yeah, I love that game fiercely. Those of you who are listening who've never played Okami, just grab it. Do yourself a favor. It's such a joy. But I grabbed that, and I haven't played it yet, but I did pick up Dragon's Dogma, The Dark Arisen.
Oh, nice.
So I grabbed that. I haven't played it yet, but it's on my list to get at. So.
Well, I talked about this on a CoronaCast.
Is that what we're calling it?
When I do like the daily just
the CoronaCast.
I'm lonely and sad.
I think that's a better name, the Lonely and Sad Podcast.
The Lonely Sad Podcast. So I talked about how I've been tinkering with Pokemon Gold, the Game Boy Color version, not Heart Gold. So that's the other retro thing that I've been doing. And I didn't do too much else today because I was busy most of the morning. But at this point, I'm doing a lot of friendship grinding, which just entails me riding back and forth on a bike to get my...
And that hairdresser.
I still need to look up the most efficient ways to do it when it's that far back, but in more modern games, so you can do like those massages and it's only netting you like 200 steps worth of friendship.
Yep.
So like you could spend weeks going to the massage or the hairdresser to try to build up enough friendship to get an evolution. But I wanted to tell you the team that I'm going with. I got to, of course, my Cyndaquil, who's now a Quilava.
Of course.
I got Flaffy. Those are the two must-haves.
Of course, you have some.
I'm also going to try Togetech.
Togetech really wasn't that great in that gen, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we'll see. He might get swapped out for a Heracross, depending on how much I want to search for a Heracross.
And they're pretty late in the game. You can't really find it until on your way to the 8th gym.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to use both Umbreon and Espeon. I already have a Ditto in the daycare center.
Yeah, but they're both friendship. Do you really want to put yourself through that?
I'm gonna be doing a lot. I'm gonna do a test later tonight, and just ride around back and forth, like watching like an episode of Breaking Bad, to see how much friendship I build up just riding back and forth in 45 minutes.
But you're rewatching Breaking Bad?
Oh yes. That's a topic for an After Dark. And actually, I just heard back from Ryan. He might be down to do something later on tonight.
Let me know.
Yeah, so we may just squeeze in an After Dark here. And the so I'm going to see if like how much friendship that builds up and if it can evolve. And then just like hatch two Eevees and have both of them. And then my sixth team member that I decided with, I'm going to try Meryl. Because I want to use all Gen 2 Pokemon and I need a water type.
Oh.
So, I mean...
My God.
It is bulky. It's a bulky Pokemon.
That's all it's got is defense.
Right.
You're essentially got a Shuckle, but not as efficient.
All of these are also monotypes, except for Togetech. Got Fire, Water, Electric, Psychic, and Dark.
And like, what's Togetech?
Flying Normal.
Oh.
In that generation.
It's got the normal type. Mm.
Yeah. So... It's going to be interesting because there's not a whole lot of move diversity in there either. Like, Typhlosion's pretty exclusive to fire. In that generation, Ampharos is pretty exclusively electric. All of the Eevees always are pretty locked into their type. I'm not sure about Meryl. Togetech might give me the most move diversity, but I also don't know where its stats play out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Man, Togetech and original Gen 2. Oh,
I know, right?
I don't think that's gonna go well for you, but
you know what? You know what? You know what I also did, just to make this tougher on myself as well? I turned the battle style from shift to fixed. So now when a trainer wants to send another Pokemon, I don't get the option to switch.
Oh.
So far it's been fine because Quilava and Flaffy are overleveled and overpowered.
Oh.
But we'll see how that goes when I get later in the game.
That's so gross.
Yeah, it's gonna be good.
John, don't do this to yourself. We love you. Don't.
No,
you don't.
I deserve it. I deserve it.
They are you can whipping change. Yourself I while you're doing this? I can fix them.
But anyway, why don't we close it out there? Because we'll be hopefully doing an After Dark later on tonight. So this is a show. After the After Dark, we'll work out a time to reconvene and do the official show. And see if we can get back onto a regular pattern here.
Yeah, it'd be tough, especially we're going to have to do it via Skype for a little while. So...
Yeah. The nice thing is that we're all... Yeah, the one positive thing is that we're all like recording from different sources here, because Skype just freaked out and you sounded like a robot, which shouldn't matter, because you're recording the audio off of Skype.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Till next time, everybody.
So long.